Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl goes shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
Hey, welcome everyone to another edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad. We got a good one. Former Magic player Pat Garrity joins the broadcast, and you certainly don't want to miss that. Magic fans, the Florida Department of Transportation reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. If you've been drinking, don't get behind the wheel. Instead, find a sober driver or catch a ride service. Remember, drive sober or get pulled over. Have a great night and drive safe. Lots to cover with former Magic player Pat Garrity. 10 years in the NBA, 9 of them right here in City Beautiful. He was a part of that Heart and Hustle team. We'll get his thoughts on that year, what that looked like, as it was his first year in Orlando, playing alongside Tracy McGrady in the prime of his career. What does he remember about those years? And is there an opportunity for Pat Garrity, former member of the front office with the Detroit Pistons, to possibly return to a front office here in the NBA? And his thoughts as an analyst on this Orlando Magic team and how good they can be, especially Paolo Banchero. Lots to get into with Pat Garrity on this edition of Magic Pod Squad.
This is Fonz Wagner of the Orlando Magic.
This is Cole Anthony.
This is Jalen Suggs.
This is Paolo Banchero of the Orlando Magic, and you're listening to the Pod Squad.
Hey, welcome everyone to the latest installment of Orlando Magic Pod Squad. Dante Marcatelli, George Galante, Jake Chapman, and we're joined by Pat Garrity, 10-year NBA veteran, 9 of them right here with the Orlando Magic. Worked for 4 years in the front office with the Detroit Pistons, television analyst, a front office insider on the stadium, but probably most noted for his time carrying the pregame show here in Orlando on Bally Sports Florida. Right, Pat? What is it going to take for us to get you back as an analyst here in Central Florida?
My wife and I talk about that all the time because after I retired, I went to business school. I had big ideas of like making something out of myself. And I say, why didn't I just stay in Orlando and continue to play golf at Bay Hill where we lived and just done pre and post game shows with Dante?
Yes, why not? And where'd you land? Can we circle back on that? Because Bay Hill's still open, right? You could still come back and golf
and still do some pregame shows. And Dante's still here, and so am I.
Although I have some competition now from Q Rich, I don't think he's given up that seat, and he has a lot to say, as we all know.
Yes, it does. You're familiar with him as well. As you look at what you've done, right? You went back, you got your degree, you moved on, you've had success wherever you've gone. Is it unambitious that George and I are still here, or is it amazing that we've been able to hang on this long?
You've been doing something right. You've survived. The way I would look at it is you've survived the rebuilds, and now you're coming out on the other side. I think that's like one of the more impressive things about Orlando is, and again, we were talking about this just getting ready for the trip to come up there, is just how many people are still there from when I was there, which I think it is a testament a lot to, you know, kind of the ownership and how Mr. DeVos always like treated people. And I think it's a special thing, especially like in sports where you do see kind of a lot of turnover in the things that you guys do.
That's a very good point.
That way, because Dante and I usually see it as laziness. So I'm glad that you we can bring you on to make us feel a little bit better about ourselves. So, Pat, catch everybody up with what you're doing now. We know you're all over. I mean, every time I turn on the TV, it's you and Shams breaking down trades and moves and critiquing.
I love it. I think it's on NBA radio.
I know. It's rating spikes everywhere when Pat is there.
Yeah, so, you know, I was, after a few different things, was with the Pistons, started in Detroit with Stan, and was there for 6 years, four with him, and then two kind of in a transition period before Troy Weaver came in. And then after that, you know, really didn't put too much effort to trying to get back into a front office job. At that time, my son was right in the middle of high school, and I wanted to enjoy, like, being around him in his sports career. And I liked some of the media stuff that I had done, you know, 10 years ago. That was really my only exposure to it. And, you know, I had known Shams over the years. Was never really close to him, but he called me up and he said, "Hey, we're doing this show. Would you like to come on and you know, try it? We have an opening. We're looking for, like, an analyst." And that was on Inside the Association, which carried all the Bally Sports channels up until kind of the beginning of this year. I mean, there was some restructuring. So I did that for a few seasons. I still do specials with them on Stadium, which are streamed on Twitter, and get and a lot of it because of Shams, get incredible engagement of people watching these trade deadline specials and free agency previews and draft, things like that. So that's been a lot of fun. But now that we're empty nesters and our son is off to college, I'm kind of giving it one, I don't know if it's, we'd say one last, but one kind of final good effort to hook up back up with the team and get back to
work. Nice.
I'll be 48 this summer. So I don't think I'm quite yet ready to retire. I tell people I'm semi-retired. So that leaves the door open.
That's what I tell people too, but that's what I ask here. It's amazing. They basically come in semi-retired.
Well, so how has the game changed, Pat? Because you got, obviously it's, I mean, it seems to change yearly, but when you first went this route with the Detroit Pistons to now, right? I mean, the staffs are enormous. I can remember when you were here in Orlando, right? What was that front office? Gabe, right?
Gabe, Dave Forsyk, Otis at the end there. Yeah.
Yeah. Now we've got at least 30 people in our analytics team, right? It's amazing how this whole front office system has morphed.
It has. And, you know, it even in the 10 years from when I started with Stan, so we joined in 2014, he put together at the time what was considered a giant staff. And that was like four pro scouts, four college scouts, three assistant GMs, like two analytics guys. That's like an average staff now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So number one, you know, and I think that what you see, and you don't see a lot of this actually being reported, one of the challenges is actually managing all of those people well, right? Because if you think about what a GM is really supposed to be good at, it is supposed to be identifying talent, having some kind of sort of like strategic plan to, you know, depending on where you're at in your team's life cycle. And then, like, really good good relationship with agents and other teams to kind of get done what you need to get done. Those are really hard skills to have. And then layer on top of that, being able to manage a bunch of scouts, a bunch of people at different points in their career, analytics people who might have worked kind of in the corporate world outside of basketball that aren't used to that culture. It's a really difficult job. So I think the guys that have done it well are unique.
Ben, as far as the analytics go, you sort of presided over, or at least been able to observe, the development of that world and obviously the amount of resources pumped into it. But then I think the way that we understand it, and now all of a sudden there's like backlash, and I always hear people, you know, sort of make it the boogeyman, and I don't think they have any idea what they're talking about. Where do you come down on all of that? How is it best applied? Is it just a tool? When you do get back in, how are you going to use it?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, the way I always like break it down is there's a really like two ways that you could use it. One is like descriptive and one is predictive, right? And I think that there's no question that using kind of data to understand what happened is mm-hmm. like invaluable, and you have to do that just because you just don't have, there's so much going on in the game that it's just hard to understand. So even the people that bash, you know, analytics are like using it to kind of confirm sure, you know, the record or what they thought happened, right? So that's number one. And like, especially like on the coaching side, like there's no coaching staff in the NBA that's not using data to determine their game plan, you know, whether or not they want to admit it, like how they cover pick and roll, like how the type of players and teams that they're defending, that's going into all of their decision-making. And every single coaching staff has like a coaching analytics analyst on their staff. I think the difficult thing and like the more disparity among teams how you use it is kind of from a front office perspective. Like when you're talking about the extent that it plays into the draft or into free agency and things like that, because that's predicting the future. And, you know, it's easy to use like big data sets when you can make, you know, a million decisions and you're hoping to have a hit rate of, you know, 55 or 60%.
Right.
A lot of times in the NBA, a 55 or 60% hit rate, like you get 4 of 10 draft years wrong, like your first 4 wrong, like you could still be on track, but you're out of a job. That's I think where it's a little more difficult. But, you know, teams obviously put money into it and they have kind of analytic models to predict player success. At the end of the day, though, it's the GM's. The GM is not going to go in front of a press conference and defend his draft pick because he said, look, we had these 10 guys from MIT and women from MIT that built this awesome model. I was doing what the model said. Like, well, how could you blame it on me?
Take it on MIT if you don't like it. Yeah, that's right. Talk to him. How has it changed with the agents? You know, as far as agents, right? Because it seems like there's so many of them now. It seems, and you know, I'm not saying it's for better or worse, but it seems to have changed. That relationship piece with agents is huge too for front office folks.
Yes, I think a lot of that has to do with the consolidation in the agency world. And so maybe if you look at 10 or 20 years ago, there were many more smaller agents spread out. They were still the power agents, like David
Falk
and Mark Barbstein, you know, goes. But now with how powerful agencies like CAA and Clutch and obviously like, you know, Wasserman and Excel, like those are the big ones. They cover so many guys. They do, just because they have so many guys, they have a great deal of power. And so if you're a team, you can't look at it as a, you know, this is a one-time negotiation that we're going to, you know, we're going to try to win. Or you have to think about, you know, the future and the other implications of kind of keeping the relationship going that way.
I'm looking at the analytics, Pat, and my analytics say that if you were playing in today's game,
yes,
I mean, how rich would you be, first of all? Because I mean, everybody's looking for a 6'9", 6'10" guy that can bomb threes. You were ahead of your time.
40% 3-point shooter.
Yeah. Do you think maybe I was born a little too early?
Well, number one, I would have been a center.
That's true. But you wouldn't have to go down on the block, and you'd be go right where you were.
Exactly. Yeah, we could have found, but you know, that's what I said. If you just paired me with Bo could play defense, protect the rim.
Yes, right? Yes, exactly.
No, I think there was, though, even, you know, the shooting aspect, obviously, but, you know, and you would have, the way that guys work on their game now is different too, but just the level of skill of even stretch, you know, one-dimensional type 4 men or 5 men right now is like way beyond. And you watch how these guys, like everyone can handle, everyone can pass. So the skill level to me is incredible. I think I always thought of myself as a pretty skilled player, but then I watch like, I'm like, God, I might have had a hard time.
Well, you demorphed like they do. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. Now we're watching a 7'4" guy. He might be 7'6" and the things that he can do, right? Do you sit back sometimes and just marvel at that and how much it's changed and some of the we got to, right, with a guy like Wembanyama and these guys, that what they can do, Bol Bol, Kevin Durant, I mean, it's remarkable.
I do, and I think there's something to all of the criticism right now that's going on in the NBA about so much offense and how boring the game is to watch. Because I talk to people who, and it's not an uncommon thing to say, I'd rather just watch college basketball. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, And I think a lot of it has to do with just how skilled everyone is and how easy it looks. Because it looks so easy and everything looks the same, it looks like there's not much going on. And you brought up Kevin Durant. If you watch how Kevin Durant scores, like, he takes incredibly difficult shots.
Yes, yes.
You know, contested shots with people game planning to stop him, and it doesn't look like he's putting in any effort at all.
Well, let me ask you, that's a very good point, but you played with Tracy McGrady in the prime of his career, right? And we talked to him a couple of months ago, and, you know, Tracy, well, you know, you're not surprised. Tracy would tell you he'll average 45 in today's game, but you had a front row seat to prime Tracy McGrady in this day and age defensively where you can't touch these guys, right? That he's able to get wherever he wants on the floor. You can't impede anybody offensively. What would he look like today?
McGrady would be, McGrady would be a top five player, the top 10 player. No, there's no question in my mind about that today. And I think that the thing that people don't, and his game completely translated to today. Again, I don't think the thing that people realize, unless they really watched it back in the day, is just how dangerous in all areas of the floor he was. Like, one of the best parts of his game was kind of that mid post area where he could ISO. And he was also one of the best passers that I ever played with. And so in an era where you do have, where he would have had a lot more spacing, we'd have been surrounded by four shooters, he would have been incredibly, incredibly difficult to you couldn't stop him. I mean, he would have averaged 30 points.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary, indulges your senses, and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Leesa.com/iHeart. That's Leesa.com/iHeart.
Ben, as far as the scoring goes, I mean, because it's a pretty hot topic right now, do you think it's in a good place? Because first off, anybody who tells you I prefer college basketball over pro, they don't watch college basketball either. That's just one of those things people say at the bar. Is it in an okay place? Did we kind of overcorrect and now we need to bring it back? I'm not saying we need, 95 to 93 every night, but has it gone a little too far, do you think? Because I'm saying, I almost suggest that we alter the dimensions of the court and we're getting rid of the corner threes. And I'm like, okay, let's tap the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, like, who doesn't like scoring? I mean, I think that's the thing that always, like, baffles me. Who doesn't like a game where the thing that is rewarded is skill? Like, that's the game is moved. And, whether or not, you could allow a little bit more physicality and take some of the touch fouls out, I think that you probably could. Like, not to the extent that college does. College, to me, is like, it's like a bloodbath. Like, you watch like a guy come through the lane. It's not fun to watch at all. You know, I do think that the one thing, and this is less related, I think, kind of to the physicality and scoring, but then more to kind of the, I think the criticism a lot of times in the spotlight that you see on referees. I think that the NBA has made such an effort to minimize error and provide transparency to the fans and, you know, with the replay and all this kind of stuff. I think that actually taking a step back and going more toward on the path of like, look, these are humans, they're fallible. Like in the end, it all washes out.
Yeah.
It would make for a much better product. Like we don't need to know the names of these officials. They're not part of the show, right?
That's a great point.
It depends on who you ask.
Yeah, it depends on who you ask. And I think what just happened for, if you're a younger official, like there's no reason why you wouldn't do anything other than by the book. And that means the way that you interact with players and coaches. And, you know, and maybe this is kind of like a little bit of like the nostalgia coming out, but I kind of like look back at the day when you had Steve Giavi or Jess Kersey or some of these guys. And you knew that, like, if you said something to them or they didn't like your coach, they were going to, like, call it a certain way. And that was just part of the game.
That's part of the game. Joey Crawford, right? You couldn't combat Joey Crawford.
I mean, like, think about the other night against Brooklyn. We had a situation where there's three and a half minutes to go in the game. We were up by 30 or whatever. The game was well in hand. And we had a 5-6 minute delay for a challenge or something.
We had a challenge.
And you're just like, oh my God, like there has to be put some common sense back into it too when it comes to the officiating as well. It's like, listen, like one of those guys could have went and talked to Kevin Ollie and been like, listen, Kevin, like we have reservations at 9:45. Like it's time to get out of here.
Yeah.
This one's up, through the door.
George, speaking of the size of staffs though, there's a guy behind the bench with a clipboard whose entire job is challenges.
That's true.
He's living and dying with that challenge.
That's a good point. And you know what's sad is I don't even know if he got it right. I think he missed the challenge. What would you tell Magic fans about this team as you kind of put on your analyst hat? And I know Magic fans are excited. There's a buzz in town. They haven't been this many games above 500 in February since 2012. Been a long time coming. A lot of excitement here in town. What can this team do? What do you like about this group?
I think that one of the really impressive things about this team is and it has to do with how the team is built, but how they're actually doing it, which is on the defensive end. I think I looked and they were, on Basketball Reference at least, top five defensively. Like at this point of the season with this young of a team, that is incredibly impressive. I think one of the difficult things, and you're seeing this a little bit with Minnesota, although with Minnesota, a lot of it has to do with Rudy Gobert, is that's the route that they've gone as well. They're number one in the West. They're the number one defensive team. And the question is going to be, once the playoffs start, the way they play and is their firepower offensively going to be able to translate? And I think that is going to be the interesting thing to watch with the Magic as the years go forward, is what type of development that you need from your own players, and what else do you need to improve till you're at least an average offensive team? Because I think that it's really hard. It's really, really hard to win going all out on offense, right? The number of players that can carry you not only through the regular season but be successful in the playoffs. There's just so few of those guys. So to have a group of players like the Magic do right now that can be an elite defensive team, it gives you a little bit of leeway and saying, like, look, we just need to add some peripheral pieces here, and we don't need to be the number one offensive team. We just need, let's get on a 15-16, and then you're talking about hosting home court playoff games. So that to me is like the really impressive thing about that team. And then, I was just looking at this the other night, kind of prepared to come on. I was looking at kind of Paolo's first couple of years.
Wait a minute. You said you prepared to come on here?
The guy's always ready.
At least somebody prepared to come on here. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, but I was looking at, the question in my mind really is can Paolo be, and this is a little bit of a cheap comparison because they're both like Duke guys, but can he be Jason Tatum? Can he be like the number one guy that's eventually moving into like MVP? And if you look at the stats, kind of overachieving relative to Tatum did in his first couple of years. Now, Tatum probably shot the ball better from three, and he's continued that on with high volume. And I think I don't know if that's necessarily where Paul is going, but like, there's a chance that he could be that for you guys. And that's like the hardest thing to have is like a number one who's an all NBA level player on a team. If you don't have that, you're always going to be a fringe playoff team. If you have that number one guy who's an all NBA type guy, you're in the conversation to be a perennial playoff team.
Well, can I ask real quick, guys? I know you guys want to jump in, but can I just to expand on that? What does that, is that one guy that helps this team make that jump? Is it a couple of, you said peripheral pieces? Is it just a couple of guys? Do you need that third consistent scoring option? What opens things up for Paolo where he can continuously be that kind of guy? This is remarkable what he's doing now without the spacing.
Yeah, no, I think it's obviously shooting. And so that's, you know, you can get guys that are, you know, maybe one-dimensional isn't what you want, but are available in free agency or through trade because they have some sort of flaw, but they can really shoot the ball well. And given the right team and given the right other, like, above-average defensive players are, like, playable players. You know, for the Magic, I'm kind of curious what happens at the point guard position, because I think that's another area where, you know, if you're able to have someone that can have the ball in their hand, you cut down on your turnovers a little bit, all of a sudden, you know, you become a little bit more of an offensive team. And I think that also puts a guy like Jalen Suggs in a much better position. Just in looking at his career possession, and correct me if I'm wrong, but his role has moved a little bit. I mean, he was never a point guard, but he's moved even like a little bit more off the ball. And by all accounts, it's led to much more efficient play for him.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, the drives have been down and basically, you know, spotting up. And that's happened with the development of Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero, who are both so good at just getting to wherever they want to get and attacking the bucket. What have you seen from Franz? He's got a little Manu Ginobili in him, doesn't he, with that Euro step. I mean, he's a big, special player, but he's very unique, is he not?
He's unique, number one, you know, such a young player to be as good as defensively as he was able to be coming in. You know, I think that's number one. And then just overall feel and skill level, I think that what you're pointing to, Jake, of being able to put it on the floor, having good vision and be able to make a play either, you know, for yourself or for someone else. That's impressive. But I think that he is the key to me, or one of the keys, obviously, like, being able to do what you guys have done defensively. Just to have those big, long, skilled, two-way type guys. That was an excellent pick.
Matt, you're coming into to the Kia Center on Sunday night. We're going to recognize you as part of the 35th anniversary. I'm looking back now. You're still in the top 10 for us in games played, three-pointers made. Talk about your 9 years here in Orlando. I mean, that was the majority of your NBA career. Did you ever think it would last that long being in Orlando with all the things that, I mean, you saw a ton of different versions of this Magic team during your time. Well, one thing was always you.
Given that I was traded after my first year, I didn't think that I was going to be any place for 9 years. Number one, when I think back about that, in that era, no one really, you never really heard about tanking, right? Tanking wasn't like a concept.
It was a much better time, Pat.
If you look at the moves of that team, I came in at the final end of the breakdown of the Shaq, Penny, Nick Anderson era. That was the original tank. That was a tank. Right. Like, let's call it what it is. And it was a tank gone wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
The funny thing was like, they didn't know how, like, they just thought, oh, Gabe, this is, of course, Gabe and the front office thought, you know, we're just going to get players. These are cheap contracts, you know, rookies, and we'll have a bunch of cap space for next summer. And didn't realize how good Ben Wallace was. Didn't realize, like, John Amici was going to be, Daryl Armstrong, you know, how good of a coach in his first year and having never coached at Doc Rivers was going to be, just in terms of how he, first of all, like, motivated everyone, how creative he was. and how he wanted to play. That team went 41-41. And so, yeah, of anything that, you know, so those first, you know, 4 years, and obviously playing with McGrady and Grant, what I remember about that, obviously playing with, you know, two of the greatest players that ever played, the disappointment a lot of times just with Grant and not him just not being like just such a good person and good player and not ever being able to be, you know, healthy in Orlando. And then, you know, there was obviously like two or three really rough years in between there. But then being with that next special group of players right at the beginning of their career of Jameer, Dwight, Keto, you know, JJ. And I wish I just was able to hang on one more year. I would have been able to go to the finals.
Yeah, so we would have been playing.
That's right, just one more year. Go think about that. You know what's interesting? See, to me, what I'm hearing is you don't have to tank because they got guys in here. You went 41-41, and then the next year you had Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill, and potentially almost Tim Duncan as well.
That's all you have to do, though, Dante, is you'd have to add Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill.
Well, that's true. Oh, that's true. But did you, what, you know, we hear about the media's perception, right, of putting that heart and hustle team together. What was your perception when you came in? Did you think also 17 wins, what this team was going to look like? Or was there a certain point in training camp or preseason where you thought, man, we might have something here?
Honestly, Dante, I was too young and probably dumb in terms of like the NBA to even have like good expectations. Yeah. Because more than
who's this? Who's this amateur guy? Is that what you said? Who's amateur?
Well, you go back and look at the training camp roster. That's the other thing. They were like, we started with like 25 guys. You know, Chris Gatling and Arlen Hill. Charles O'Bannon was there. Like, I forget what. Or Chad O'Bannon was there.
Al O'Bannon. Yep.
Yeah, but wow, good.
No, but I think the reality is, and probably veteran players had other expectations, but, you know, I was going into my second year. I wasn't even thinking about what the record was going to be. I was thinking about, like, am I going to be able to, like, get on the floor and carve out a niche for myself and, like, survive in the NBA? So I, at no point in that year, I think until later in the year where we were, like, in the mix, was anyone, I mean, I at least wasn't even thinking about like playoffs.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Well, you can't tank with a bunch of tryhards. No. Bo Outlaw on a tanking roster. I mean, come on now. That had a fatal flaw, I think, probably.
Well, not only did you play, you played all 82 games, Pat. So that's not, it's remarkable, right? I mean, those days are gone, by the way. 82 games don't happen anymore.
No. No.
All right. Well, last thing, Pat, you're going to be coming into town, as George said. You're going to be recognized here in Arena. We got a gala coming up. We got a fun couple of days with you here in town. But from a family side, I know you're a proud papa too, right? You got Henry on following in Dad's footsteps, right? At your alma mater. Let everybody know what.
That's unbelievable. That's the real story.
Yeah. So our son Henry, who was born in Orlando in 2005, both a football and a basketball player growing up. Really fell in love with football and had an opportunity, you know, pretty decent opportunities, mid-major service academies to go and play. And then also had preferred walk-on opportunities at Notre Dame and a couple other Power Five type schools. And, you know, we talked about it. I think, you know, for him, like being associated with the Notre Dame program and the education that you get from Notre Dame and just being able to be part of that was worth it, even though, you know, you're stepping into the deep end of the pool. So he's just finished up his freshman year, walk on tight end at Notre Dame, doing fantastic in school.
That's great.
We thought about bringing him down, but he's like, we got lifts on Monday. So I won't be able to make it back for a morning lift. So I'm like, that's a good excuse.
That's a good excuse. Yeah. I like that. But it's got to be cool watching. I mean, you get to relive. Yeah. I know you went to the games a lot and it's got to be cool for you to be a part of that environment.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. No, it really has. And I had always stayed in touch with the school and gone back for a couple of games, but this has created a whole new reason to be even more engaged and go back more. And it's a great, great place.
All right, Pat. Well, thanks so much. It's always great to catch up with you. And good luck the rest of the way. We're going to have a fun weekend. But as you kind of work your way through the NBA and get back with the team, it's going to be fun to watch. Keep up the great work on television, and we'll catch up soon.
All right. Great being with you guys. Thanks.
Dante, I'll do it for this edition. For you. Don't worry about it. You're all set.
Put in a good word with the sideline reporter and part-time play-by-play guy.
Perfect.
Exactly. Option D on play-by-play. That's right. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Magic Pod Squad. We'll see you next time.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl goes shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.